and joining me right now here on a Monday to go over the latest on the NBA playoffs. This guy does a great job as a national writer for the Bleacher Report. He's my good friend, Dan Favalli. Dan, how you doing today?
I'm doing well, Mark. How are you doing?
Hey, I'm doing just fine. The Orlando Magic, the team I cover locally, let's start there. After not showing up in games 1 and 2, they did in games 3 and 4 at home. It's tied at 2-2. What are your thoughts on the series where every home team keeps winning?
What is the cliche? They say the series doesn't start until the home team loses, but I think I am surprised that the Magic came back after kind of being felt like punched in the mouth or getting that wake-up call in Cleveland for the first two games. You're able to come out and win two consecutive at home for a team without a ton of playoff experience and for an offense that can still struggle a great deal in a half court to see what they've been able to do defensively against Cleveland's offense, but just, you know, sort of the play of Paolo Banchero carrying their scoring a lot of the time. It's been just not impressive to see this team coming of age because they're doing a lot of the same stuff they did in the regular season. But I have to admit, the beginning of the series, especially when they were down 2-0, this is not necessarily a point I saw them reaching.
Dude, I was at game 4. At halftime, Cleveland's up 60-51 and playing well. And I'm like, all right, we got a ball game. The Magic outscored them 37-10. And Franz Wagner outscored Cleveland 12-10. I don't understand Cleveland, because you just said about the Magic, how they're inconsistent. I think Cleveland as well. Can you explain the Cavaliers?
Probably not. And I think, look, they're more inconsistent in the sense that, like, we kind of know what the issues are for the most part night to night with when it comes to the Magic. But with the Cavs, when you all of a sudden see nights where their offense looks thermonuclear, only for it to kind of just stall out on another night, and then it's really tough to get a sense of, like, at the moment, okay, what is Evan Mobley going to do for you on the offensive end? And it's good that sometimes he might, you know, take threes. He doesn't take a three in game four, but then he's shrinking the floor for you on certain sets. You have Donovan Mitchell comes in, sometimes looks like himself, other times doesn't look like himself. Darius Garland has by and large hit his threes this series, but the stuff inside the arc has still been a problem. And I think with Cleveland, and this has probably been true for a lot of the year, Jared Allen has been just their most consistent player, and that might be the way to sort of define that. And then they do have all these injuries baked in, and they've had to try out these different lineups, but it does seem at times that J.B. Bickerstaff is sometimes still searching or maybe afraid to make some tough calls. And so I'm very interested to see what his rotation will look like as we lead into Game 5, just sort of the front line. So are they going to downsize even further? Maybe we see some Max Strus at the 4. Are they too worried about some of the size that Orlando can bring up front? But their offense, I think, is like the most inconsistent part of what they do. And right now, I don't know if it's injuries because everyone's on the floor, but it has not been great against Orlando.
I don't understand Donovan Mitchell. I agree with you. There are times he looks like Dwayne Wade, and then other times he just disappears. I don't know. Why is he not dropping 30 a game? He has the potential. I know this is long term. Is he worth a mega contract? I don't know. How about you?
That's a really tough question because he's shown that he can be a playoff gamer, which is important. But you do get into the whole, well, do you want to invest that much money in a smaller guard? And then in Cleveland's case specifically, you already have Darius Garland there. And so you're dealing with two types of redundancies a little bit with Jared Allen and Evan Mobley and then Donovan Mitchell and Darius Garland, even though the latter two and Garland and Mitchell should be able to play off each other. And I do think that you need to credit Orlando's defense, which is just hellacious on the perimeter when it comes to the way that they're able to go after Donovan Mitchell. And it's not necessarily sending, you know, to the ball or help all the time on him. They just have the personnel to kind of defend him straight up and frustrate him. But there's no doubt, like, you know, him and I look at Garland specifically, like those are two guys that need to be better at generating and making their shot.
Okay. Sports betting is legal in Florida. I still would not bet on these games moving forward. I have no idea what's going to happen. Like, you could bet who's going to win, and then do you think Cleveland is going to get over 100 points? I have no idea. What is your thoughts moving forward?
Yeah, I mean, that's probably the best advice I've heard of the playoffs is to just steer clear of betting on the Magic Cavs series. The teams, they're both really good defensively, but it just comes back to the offense where you don't understand what you're going to get night to night, but it just seems like whatever you're going to get, it's going to be ugly and unpredictable. Like, are the Magic just going to come out and shoot 45%+ from three again? Or are we going to see them go through like a trough like Phoenix just did where they were only 4 of 17? And that's like kind of the, you know, that's the the three-point shot's like the great equalizer, all this variance when it comes to the league. And like, these are two teams where it's, what was it, in game four, they combined to take only 43 three-point attempts. And that's like less than Boston basically averages a night. And so like, that's another real element of this series to consider, especially because Cleveland has the players to get up threes. And so there should never be a night where we're looking back and questioning their shot level to that extreme.
Again, Paolo Banchero had 9 points in game four, and the Magic destroyed the Cavaliers. What? That's not going to happen again. You know it's not going to happen. All right, let's go to, here with Dan Valley at the Bleacher Report, let's go to the Knicks. How about Jalen Brunson, Mr. Illinois? I'm getting credit, right? Because I'm from Illinois. I'm very proud of him. All right, I am. Knicks playoff record, beating Bernard King 47 there in Philly. How big was Brunson on Sunday?
He was huge. He accounted for, like, when you include the points the Knicks generated off his assists, he accounted for like 72, 73% of their entire scoring offense in game four. That's a really big deal. And like, Philly's really going after him. It has not been the prettiest. We saw towards the end of the game where I think the Knicks missed like 8 of their final 11 shots, that like, this is still an offense that can bog down because of that lack of creation outside of Jalen Brunson. And look, he has not had the best series, but when you're able to look at a guy and like, there's still going to be nights where, despite what Philly's going to throw at him and despite his 3-point shot not really falling, that he's going to come in and give you 40 plus points, and just the level of decision making he's had in traffic as just a small guard, it's a testament to, I think, how everyone sort of missed on him. Even the Knicks couldn't have expected him to get to the point where he would be contending for, you know, he's probably going to make second team All-NBA, which suggests that he's one of the 10 to 15 best players in the NBA right now, and it's really tough to come up with an argument against that.
How many shots did Philly miss down the stretch then?
I think these two teams combined for like 1 trillion misses down the stretch. And like, they're, the way that Philly just like has this, and I know he's not healthy, like he's dealing with the Bell's palsy and he has the knee thing. And so the fact that Joel Embiid's on the floor and played the entire second half is sort of a minor miracle. But like, the Knicks just being able to get on the offensive glass, and it's not like always Isaiah Hartenstein or Precious Achiuwa, the traditional bigs who are healthy in game four, but it's OG Anunoby, and it's Josh Hart just being able to out-rebound these guys like Tobias Harris, Joel Embiid, some of these like Sixers with size. It's a wild series, and it doesn't feel like it's going to go as long as it should, but like, this is sort of one of the two first round matchups that you could have seen going the distance because of all those sort of just functional oddities and imperfections of both teams.
How many Knicks fans were at the game yesterday?
Way more than I thought there was going to be. I remember in game three that the Knicks lost, they had showed like some cuts of some Knicks fans, and I was like, oh, like, they're really brave, like openly celebrating in Philly. And it didn't seem like there was that many Knicks fans at that game, but to see how many there were after the fact in game four, and to the point where Joel Embiid thought he was going to comment on it, that is just not, look, Philly's a sports town. This isn't like, we're not even in a place where, and this is, I'm not, you know, throwing shade at the Heat or the Magic, but like, Florida's become this New York transplant state. And like, no, like, that's not Philly. Like, I know it's local, but like, Philly is this caps lock sports town. And to see that many Knicks fans there, at least to see them that prevalent, even if they were like in the super minority, I was actually kind of floored.
I was too. All right. So if they lose this series, Philadelphia, who do you blame this time? Doc Rivers, James Harden? What do you do? Come on.
I mean, like, you can point to Joel Embiid's knee, obviously, but I think you also have to get to the question of, okay, did they sort of – they were great this season when Joel Embiid and Tyrese Maxey were healthy together. But, like, you kind of know Embiid has this murky health bill. And when you went with the James Harden trade and you decided throughout then in the course of the season to prioritize your flexibility for this summer – you just have to ask, with all these Embiid injuries that are cropping up, is kind of, I don't want to say punting on a season, but like, taking that type of view towards, oh, like, we'll regroup and we'll get them next year. There's a level of danger there because, one, we don't know who they can or will trade or sign for in free agency and over the offseason. But two, like, this dude's prime is now. I think he's 30 years old, and he's just dealt with so many injuries that you're not guaranteed next season from him. And so I think that's a question that needs to be asked, is, yeah, they have the assets to go get somebody, but does another year with this Joel Embiid injury kind of derailing your trajectory? Does that change the type of somebody you need, where you thought maybe you only needed a nice supporting cast around Maxey and Embiid? It's, well, do we kind of need like a more central star plus a better supporting cast? I think it's going to, there's going to be some interesting, you know, existential questions the Sixers have to ask them should they lose this series.
Okay, real quick. Can the Knicks get to the NBA Finals?
No. Like, the conference finals, sure.
Yeah.
I mean, looking at the matchup, like a banged-up Milwaukee team, prospectively, are most likely the Pacers. But I think, look, you saw it at the end of Game 4, and you've seen it. You know, they've had a great offense for most of this series, but I don't think you can be this reliant on offensive rebounding and then have only one really higher-level shot creator and then just make it to the NBA Finals like this, especially when you know that there's probably going to be a Boston team waiting for you in the conference finals. And now, look, they have the Bojan Bogdanovic injury to kind of deal with. What's he going to – he wasn't playing a ton, but, like, that was another guy who could come in, not just space the floor, but get the – some of his spots. And if, you know, he's not available, or if Tibbs really only wants to play him still, like, you know, 12 minutes a night or something, if he's healthy, that burden falls to Deuce McBride, OG Anunoby, Josh Hart, Dante DiVincenzo, very good players where that's just not an element of their game. And so I think that's something the Knicks need to focus on over the offseason, is determining, well, do we have that in Julius Randle? Do we need to upgrade that from Julius Randle? And I think it's the latter. They're going to need to upgrade from the Randle spot, given his playoff track record. But this Knicks team is fun. It wouldn't shock me if, you know, they got to the conference finals and maybe gave Boston a push, but I would be shocked if they made it to the NBA Finals.
We are here with Dan Feli with the Bleacher Report, going to the latest on the NBA playoffs here for a Monday. All right, Boston took care of business in Miami in Game 3. Do you feel like, all right, they are the better team and they should handle the Heat?
That's how I feel, but I know I've said this on your show before. There's just something alien about what goes on in Miami, to where I would have not expected anything like Game 2 to happen. They come out and they just drill like a million threes. And so you, like, you can't, in the back of your mind, you can't just rule out their defense making all these adjustments thanks to Eric Spoelstra after Game 3, and then maybe they get hot from downtown again. You just, because it's the Heat and because of what we've seen basically every year since 2020, you can't, if you're Boston, like you need this game just to be like that level of comfort where the pressure isn't there. Because if you're tied 2-2 against this Heat team that's missing Terry Rozier, Jimmy Butler, dealing with all these kind of other injuries, they didn't even have DeLon Wright for Game 3. That's a disaster scenario. Even if you go on to win the series in 6, like, to be tied 2-2 with this Heat team when you're this good, this historically good as the Celtics were during the regular season, I would say that's like a nightmare scenario.
I don't believe the Boston Celtics can win the NBA championship. I'm going to be a hater. Do you think they're good enough to win the title?
I think you can kind of hedge and say you're not a hater and, you know, kind of defend it as, I don't think they're going to win the championship because the Denver Nuggets exist. But I think they can win a title. And look, part of the, like, a big part of the battle is just getting there. And I think that their path could end up being more favorable than even they expected relative to what's going on in this Eastern Conference. But some of the things that they're definitely going to need to change, I mean, most of it just comes on the offensive end, where it does feel like things bog down or they deviate from the script too much, or that sometimes if they're facing these zone defenses, are they hesitant to bust them up? And then just in crunch time, the pecking order goes all over the place. So there's certainly that question there. But I think I look at their top 6 guys and what they're able to do at both ends of the floor, even when certain guys are having off nights, where Kristaps Porzingis has not had the greatest series right now. I absolutely think they're capable of winning a title. Am I going to pick them if they wind up facing the Nuggets? No, I'd favor Denver. Anyone else in the West, if it's a Minnesota, if it's an OKC, I think that's more of a discussion.
All right, let's go to the West real quick here with Dan Favalli with the Bleacher Report. The Minnesota Timberwolves, I couldn't even believe this stat. First series win in the playoffs in 20 years. What? They destroyed the Phoenix Suns. And Anthony Edwards, man, that dunk he had on KD. This guy is fantastic. He's 22 years old. He's an all-star. My question for you, and I've been waiting 24 hours to ask you this. Did he steal Ja Morant's career from the standpoint of all the kids like Ja Morant? Do all the kids like Anthony Edwards now on the basketball court?
Yeah, I guess he might have stolen some of that spotlight. I mean, if you remember, it wasn't long ago that we were like, oh, is, you know, are Ja and Zion, are those going to be the guys that are kind of grappling with Luka Doncic for face of the league battle? And now it's Anthony Edwards and Victor Wembanyama, and then, yeah, sure, Luka Doncic is still there. And of course, we have Jokic. We're just talking about that even younger guard. So he's kind of come in, and it's everyone's talking about how this dude needs to, you know, ascend into superstardom and prove he can do this and that. It's like, no, he's already there. I think you could make a case that maybe Rudy Gobert was more important to the team this series. He was just so dominant defensively, but, like, Ant is driving everything offensively. And the way that he defends on not just certain possessions, but a lot of possessions. You look at him, and I know this is sort of an arbitrary title, but he has the ability to be the best two-way player in the NBA, if not outright the best player in the NBA one day. And so to be leading a team this good at this level at the age of 22 is pretty incredible.
As a guy that loves basketball, do you get hyped where he's kind of got this Michael Kobe mentality? He just wants to destroy people. I love it. I do.
I actually had tweeted this last night that every Anthony Edwards liftoff feels it has like a, he's thinking, well, I'm already up here, so I might as well try and murder somebody while I'm at it vibe to it. And I kind of respect the hell out of it. And even if he doesn't end up, you know, sometimes his dunks get blocked or he's going to miss them, but just like every finish seems like it's, he's trying to annihilate someone or something. And so I do love that sort of aspect of his game, especially when you combine it with, there is a level of humor to him that MJ and Kobe, at least not to the end of his career, when he's talking, like, I appreciate having that like relatable humor. So I think that makes him even more likable from a basketball perspective.
I know they'll have to take on the winner of Denver Lakers. Is Denver just going to handle business and put the Lakers out of their misery first?
Yeah. I mean, they've been coasting. Like, I think you could make the case that Denver has yet to play a good game against the Lakers, and yet they're up 3-1 and could have been up 4-0. I do think it behooves them to not just finish this as quickly as possible, but like, you want to kind of have a trademark game, because they've even come out and said that the Timberwolves were the toughest Western Conference opponent they faced in the playoffs last year. And to now go up against this version of the Timberwolves that I think they are built to disrupt what Denver can do just with their size, like, because that's what Denver does really good of, is having this sort of not positionless size, but just size everywhere. Even Murray's like a little bit bigger than you expect. And so that's going to be maybe the most fascinating matchup of the second round, if not the most fascinating matchup we've seen in the playoffs thus far.
Has the window closed for LeBron, KD, Steph, the guys who've been the face of the league? Is it over, and now is it a changing of the guard?
It's not over, because I think you look at those three players specifically, and I could even turn the question to you, is which of those, like, those guys can still be the best player or no worse than the second best player on a championship team. It's that they just don't have these championship supporting casts around them. And to some degree, I think with the exception of Steph, like, it's kind of a little bit self-inflicted when you look at Kevin Durant's trade demands and what happened in Phoenix, and then just LeBron having a say in what some of the moves the Lakers made. But I think it's more about can their teams find it? Because look at how great LeBron and Anthony Davis have been for most of the series and most of this year, even right down to their availability. It's can the Lakers, can the Suns, can the Warriors assemble a worthwhile supporting cast around them within the confines of the salary cap penalties they're all facing, and that's Golden State and Phoenix specifically. And if it's not going to happen there, do any of them want to get out and go somewhere where it might? So there's definitely a changing of the guard. But to me, it feels more like, okay, the future of the league's in good hands, rather than, oh, these dudes are just too old to do anything meaningful right now.
Let's end with this. I watched the other game yesterday where it was Clippers and Mavericks. Was that a solar eclipse where Harden and Paul George actually were, like, good and made plays? I was in shock by the end of that game. How about you?
Yeah, that was a wild game. And also to be up by 31 and then still almost lose, though, like, that doesn't make you feel all that great. But they needed a big Paul George offensive performance specifically, just because it felt like he's been disappearing or not as present within the larger context of LA's offense, which is, you know, even game one, which Kawhi missed, and he didn't play in game four either. So it's like, it was weird to kind of see him like sort of fade to the background when it wasn't necessarily a hierarchical issue. But this series has just been all sorts of bizarre. Like, Luka, like, you sort of have to bet on, okay, what's going to turn around? Like, is Luka Doncic going to continue to shoot so poorly from the floor? No, you don't think so. And then are the Clippers, like, are they going to be able to defend this well at points? There's been a lot of things, like presumptions, where you thought the Clippers were going to have a terrible transition defense here, and it's actually been okay. A lot of my, you know, preconceptions about this series have kind of been turned on their head, and I don't necessarily know who to favor. I default, I think, towards the Mavericks, just because I think Luka's going to play better. And this Kawhi Leonard stuff now, where the way Lawrence Frank came out, it feels like it would almost be a surprise if he played again this year.
I just want you to know this. I know you're super busy, so I appreciate coming on. It was awesome going to a playoff game, and just the energy of an NBA playoff crowd is one of the most underrated things in sports. And we saw it Like that Dallas game yesterday, that crowd was awesome. I need to get you out here, buddy. You got to fly down and come to a Magic game. You got to do it, buddy. It's awesome.
It has to be good to, like, if, especially as a Magic fan, to not only see the team in the playoffs, but it's like it's kind of a team that has, yeah, they're playing with house money at the moment in a sense, but like they have these sustainable building blocks and these longer term expectations. So that has to add just like a layer of intrigue and attachment to just the entire environment.
It's the first time where these young guys, they're starting to get the support of the fans where it's like they're starting to become celebrities, if that makes sense. Like people love Shaq and Penny. Like those guys are gods here in Orlando. You know, they love Dwight Howard till he kind of left. That's another story. But like Paolo and Franz and Suggs and Cole Anthony, like they're starting to like people are going crazy for them. That's what's cool about it.
Mo Wagner too, apparently. Some of the reactions he gets from the Magic crowd is really fun to see.
It was weird, Dan, where it's like you're watching Inside the NBA and those guys are actually talking about the Magic and the Cavaliers. Like, wait, what? Like, remember, they were only on TV once this year is when they retired Shaq's jersey. One time on national TV. Wild. Dan Favalli with the Bleacher Report. My man, thank you so much for coming on. Have a great week, all right?
You as well. Thanks so much for having me, Mark. Talk to you soon.